and welcome to Addressing Alaskans, a program capturing community conversations in South Central Alaska. Join us each week on KSKA Anchorage and travel to different spots throughout our community and listen to local groups gathered to discuss what matters to Alaskans.
This week, candidates for Alaska Governor Sean Parnell and Bill Walker. Alaska Governor Sean Parnell, a Republican, is running for re-election with Anchorage Mayor Dan Sullivan as his running mate. Challenger Bill Walker is a lifelong Republican. He's running at the top of the ticket with Democrat Byron Mallott in the lieutenant governor spot under the Alaska First Unity banner. Other candidates for Alaska governor who were not present at the chamber debate are Libertarian candidate Carolyn Clift and Alaska Constitution Party candidate J.R. Myers. This debate was recorded at the Egan Center on Monday, October 21st. It was hosted by the Anchorage Chamber of Commerce. Chamber of Commerce President Andrew Halcrow is the debate's moderator. He starts us off.
Today's debate will follow a very traditional format. We will start with two-minute opening statements by the candidates. We will then go into seven different questions created by our legislative committee. Then we will have two apiece candidate-to-candidate questions. Then we will, if we have time, we will throw it open for audience questions. Again, if we have time, please ask a question. Don't make a statement. You know who you are out there. And then we'll finish with candidate closing statements. So we will go alphabetically, and we will start with Governor Parnell.
Well, thank you. Thanks, Chamber. Thanks for being here. You know, 16,000 new jobs, thousands of new businesses in this town alone. No more guaranteed declining oil production. The state of Alaska in the driver's seat of a big gas line project moving forward. No Anchorage brownout drills because businesses are exploring a Cook Inlet due to my leadership with legislators. 3,000 high school graduates have earned the Alaska Performance Scholarship. More law enforcement keeping Alaskans safe. More cruise ships with visitors buying from Alaska businesses. And millions more dollars in your paychecks and in small business owners' paychecks, because for the last 2 years, we've been able to stop that increase, that increase in the payroll tax that you all were paying. We're clearly on the right path for Alaska. Today, you're gonna hear me demonstrate that Mr. Walker's approach to a gas line will delay or kill that gas line. You'll hear about his shifting positions from forum to forum. And he's going to try to convince you that I won't even acknowledge there's a financial problem in the state when I'm the one with the record of record vetoes and record spending reductions. And yes, we've earned that AAA financial rating on my watch. On the income side of the ledger, I championed SB 21, the More Alaska Production Act. Bill Walker opposed that bill. And today, our deficit or fiscal gap would be bigger by almost $200 million if we'd followed Mr. Walker's advice and repealed SB 21. I offer solid, steady, and a stable record of economic growth, and that is my vision forward. That is my promise. Thank you.
Thank you, Governor Parnell. Mr. Walker, 2 minutes opening statement.
Good afternoon. I'm Bill Walker, candidate for governor. As a lifelong Alaskan, I come from the private sector. I'm a member of this Chamber of Commerce. I've made payroll in companies I've owned for the last 35 years. I own my own law firm. We specialize in oil and gas here in Anchorage. I introduced my wonderful wife, Donna, 37 years. Thank you, Donna, for being here, being part of my life in this campaign. I ran for governor with my running mate, Lieutenant Governor Byron Mallott. What an honor that is, also a lifelong Alaskan. Byron is a well-recognized business leader in this state, a commissioner with Governor Egan when he was age 27, former executive director and chairman of the board of the Alaska Permanent Fund Corporation, former chairman of the Sea Alaska Corporation, and former chairman of the Alaska Federation of Natives. We're running as a unity ticket. We recognize it's time to put politics aside and fix the problems of Alaska and the opportunities of Alaska as Alaskans. I'm running for governor in part due to the financial condition we're in as a result of several years of deficit spending. I put on your tables a 10-year forecast by Governor Parnell of the presented to the legislature. As you see in every year, there's a deficit for the next 10 years. $7 million a day is our current deficit. That was established at about $100 oil prices, not the oil prices today. Alaska needs leadership that'll stop the deficit spending. Alaska is a resource state. We have trillions of dollars of resources. We don't have a problem with resources. We have a distribution problem. It's time we come together as Alaskans and fix the distribution problem. I will act on the recommendation of this Chamber of Commerce, the State Chamber of Commerce, the NAACP, the Alaska Native Health Consortium, and the Anchorage Faith Action Congregation in accepting expanded Medicaid. It'll help up to 40,000 Alaskans. It'll reduce the cost of health care across the state, create 4,000 new jobs in the healthcare field, assuming that it continues to be funded 100% by the federal government. It's time we be Alaskans again, time we put politics aside to fix the problems of the Alaskans. That's what Byron Millott and I will do. Thank you very much for the opportunity to present to you.
Thank you, Mr. Walker. The first question has to do with Alaska's natural gas project. The question: an Alaska natural gas pipeline project is one of the Anchorage Chamber members' top priorities. How close is Alaska to making this a reality? Mr. Walker, we'll start with you. 1 minute.
Boy, I've been at this for a while. I say I have with me binders of all of the announcements on Gasline. I've got three more of these, just like this. We are not where we should be on that issue. We are not in the driver's seat, as the governor said. It's clearly we're not. We have transferred some reason our ownership over to TransCanada. The market's there. The gas is there. Right-of-way permits have been obtained over the years. We've been further than we are today in the past. The one thing we're missing for a gas line, the absolute one thing we're missing, is leadership. We need a governor that understands what it takes to do a project, is willing to stand up and say, this is what we're going to do. We need to have a governor that'll do on the gas line what Bill Egan did on the oil line. He said, we're going to make sure an oil line is built. We'll be in charge of making that happen. We need to do the same thing on a gas line. Work with the process that's in place, absolutely, once we are able to see it, because it's all confidential. Take a look at what's there, progress it, but be ready to step up and say, we're going to move it on. We're not going to let the boardrooms in Houston, Calgary, and London decide the future of this state. We will, and we'll do it in Juneau.
Thank you, Mr. Walker. Just a brief warning to the candidates. Our own Megan James is the timekeeper, and I would suggest you keep within your time limits because she can get fairly aggressive with that, though. Governor Parnell, same question to you, sir. How close is Alaska to making a natural gas pipeline a reality?
Far closer today than when I started 5 years ago, and it's true. Bill Walker has been advocating and working for a gas line for 30 years with not a lot to show for it. But in the last 5 years, we have dramatically improved Alaska's lot in that side. The state is in the driver's seat. There's no question about it. The analysis went up before legislators to move us into pre-FEED. They committed $70 million to that effort. We've never been in a place where the companies and the state are aligned in moving a project forward and paying money for real work and real engineering. Now, I've heard Mr. Walker say, and he said to the AP, that the project is fatally flawed. If the project structure is fatally flawed, that means he's going to go renegotiate it. That means delay. That means he's going to kill the gas line project when we've already made substantial progress, and we need to continue on this path. You're getting really aggressive with those time signs. Nice.
Thank you. Governor Parnell, we'll stay with you. The next question is on Alaska's fiscal future. And you know this, 16 years ago, the state struggled with a structural budget deficit. It looks like we're struggling again. Combined with the increasing cost of government, by all accounts, in the next decade, Alaskans could be asked to reach into their own pockets to support the cost of government. Over the next 4 years, what will be your fiscal plan to protect the economy and Alaskans? 1 minute.
Spend less. And I spent the last 3 years working to make sure that the revenue side has a shot at an increase with SB 21 moving forward. In 1999, my colleagues, when I was in the state Senate, elected me as the co-chair of Senate Finance when oil was $9 a barrel. That's because they trusted me to lead in tough times. That's what we're doing right now. We're leading with record spending vetoes in 2010 and 2011, and with record spending reductions in 2013 and 2014. We're going to continue that path of spending less, and working to squeeze our agency budgets. We do that not just with the big picture, but we squeeze agencies themselves. For example, we make them absorb their salary increases, about $35 to $40 million a year. We make them adhere to space office space standards that will collectively and cumulatively give us an extra $100 million over time. Bottom line, we're going to spend less. That is our fiscal plan.
Thank you. Mr. Walker, same question to you. What will your fiscal plan be in the next 4 years to protect the economy and Alaskans?
First, we have to admit we have a problem. We need to act like we have a problem. We need to stop doing projects that make no sense. We need to stop doing single, no-bid projects for an LIO office that increases the rent by 600%. We need to stop studying projects that we're never going to build. We study 82% of the projects we study. We will not be able to build, but we study them. Every squeaky wheel in an election year gets a study, and we have been doing that for far too long. We now have what I call roads to re-election. We've seen that in the various debates when someone will stand up and say, will you build this road? And the governor will say, absolutely we will. I say, you know what? We need to put all the projects on the table and find out what can we do. We need to be responsible. We need to find out what we can do. Yes, we need to stop spending the way we've been spending. You know, and it's amazing that in this budget year, the biggest budget or deficit we've been in, the governor couldn't find one single item to veto. Not one. Not a single one.
Okay, the moderator is going to exercise a little-known rule called the moderator's option, and I'm going to approach this question once again, and Mr. Walker will stay with you. You've talked about reducing the budget. Can you tell us specifically where you would reduce the budget, what areas?
You know, one has to get into office. You know the enormity of the budget. I will sit down with the departments and sit down and look for off the initially 5% reductions in their efficiency of what they do. A Department of Corrections is a good example in juvenile justice. You know, the number of people in McLaughlin Youth Center are approximately half of what it has been historically, and yet that budget's gone up by 45%. So I want to make sure that the budget has matched what's gone on in various departments. There are some departments that do the similar thing of what other departments do. I want to consolidate efforts, consolidate services, consolidate travel, but find out from within the departments what can be done to reduce the cost of budget within those specific departments. It's going to be on a department basis, and I'm going to look to them first because they're the ones that will be impacted by the reduction. I want them to be part of the solution. We'll be the inclusive administration, not the exclusive. We won't just eliminate departments or eliminate services. We'll work with them in determining what we're going to do.
Thank you. Governor Parnell, specific cuts?
You know, Bill Walker just said that I made not one single veto this year. What he's effectively claiming is that I should somehow beat my own record of spending reductions because I reduced spending with legislators by over $1 billion. And we did it in part by addressing the single biggest cost driver in our operating budget. That was the unfunded pension liability. We had a $12 billion debt there that we paid down by $3 billion, and we lowered our annual payment on that debt. So instead of having a $770 million annual payment this next year, we'll have a $350 million payment. It's kind of like Congress and the President finally agreeing to make Social Security sustainable. That's how big a deal it is. So to say that I didn't make one veto this year when we reduced spending by record amounts and we addressed the single biggest cost driver in the operating budget, I think is ludicrous. I'm going to have to end there.
Okay. Mr. Walker, we will start with you this time. The topic is education. Policymakers have consistently said that reaching 90% attendance in graduation by 2020 is a state priority. However, it seems that we are stuck in a subjective soundbite dispute about fundings and outcome. As governor, what would you do to set the overall benchmarks, identify the best practices to meet those benchmarks, and then appropriately track results?
Well, first, let me thank the Chamber of Commerce for working with 40 members of the business community to create the 90% 2020 program. That's a phenomenal program. I know it was Anchorage-centric, but I think it could be used statewide. I like the model that you have put together, the effort you put together, the team you've put together. You know, we need to define what the definition of success is. And sometimes it's all come down to the BSA formula. And I don't think that's the definition we need to be battling over. It's the successful model. You know, if you're going to give me a third grade literacy test, you need to talk to me about pre-K education. You need to look at education on a holistic basis and not just look at a single number at the end of the legislative session and decide, is that going to be the determiner of a successful education program? I like very much what you've done. I would like to take that statewide.
Thank you. Governor Parnell, what benchmarks would you set and how would you appropriately track the results?
And I liked as well the benchmark that you set with many other community members of a 90% graduation rate, and I've taken it statewide already. 90% graduation rate by 2020 with 90% proficiency. One of the greatest ways we get there is through career technical education. The Northwest Arctic Borough introduced more CTE programming into their K-12 program in their schools and raised graduation rates by 11% in their first year and a half. My entire 5 years has been focused on increasing educational opportunity while also increasing funding by about $300 million in the last 5 years. Those increasing education opportunities include more and equitable funding for charter school students, for example, more opportunities in voc tech, more opportunities in residential and correspondence and homeschooling, giving parents more choices in the public school system for their children. Thank you.
We have a second question on education. This year, there are three major education policies going into effect. You have new student assessment tools, you have new teacher assessment tools, and you have new standards. As governor over the next 4 years, what benchmarks will you set to make sure that these three new initiatives that launched this year are actually tracked for success? Mr. Walker, we'll start with you again.
Sure. Data. You have to have data to know where you are. You know, a measured plan is something you can know where you are later down the process. Without the data, you're lost. And so we need to have the best data available. And the benchmark, I'm concerned about I'm not a fan of Common Core. I'm not a fan of what the governor did with Common Core as far as adopting an Alaskan Common Core, very similar to the National Common Core. You know, I've been throughout across the state of Alaska, sat in the classroom, presented to a classroom in Alaska about a month ago, and listened to the teachers in that school and the students in that school. You know, one size doesn't fit all in Alaska, so we should be able to make decisions at the local level and not necessarily put standards on the local schools, local educators. They're the best one with the boots on the ground to make some of those decisions. We need to involve them in the process, involve them in the decision process. So I'm all about local government, all about making those decisions as much as possible at the local level, not at the state or federal level.
Governor Parnell.
Bill Walker knows very well that I sat with Secretary Arne Duncan and told him we are not signing up for that Common Core effort. We're not signing up for standards that are developed at the national level and then agreeing that we are going to pass those in our state. Those are local decisions and state decisions. Our Alaska State Board of Education adopted its own Alaska high school standards. And yes, if it happens that a third grader standard is that they should be able to know when to use a small letter or a capital letter, and that happens to be a Common Core standard, that's what happens, but that makes common sense. But we are not a Common Core state because we are not signing off on the federal government making those decisions for us. Alaskans, whether you're an Anchorage School District School Board member or an Alaska State Board of Education member, Alaskans will make those decisions for our children. How do we measure success? We measure success with a 90% graduation rate and 90% proficiency by 2020. Thank you.
Governor, we're gonna stay with you. We're gonna change courses a little bit. Campaigns are tough, you know that. They're tough on yourself, they're tough on the candidate, they're tough on your family. How do you stay grounded with your family during a very difficult campaign season?
I have a wonderful wife named Sandy Parnell who keeps me grounded, and she is here today. If you would welcome her. My faith is very important to me, and I spend time in the scriptures every morning. I spend time with my wife, and I spend time speaking and talking with our daughters, one of which, Grace, who is expecting her first child with her husband, Austin, in November. So frankly, when it, for me, it's about faith, family, and friends, and those relationships. And it's ultimately also about the Alaskans that I get to visit with, because this job is not so much about, you know, just working and thinking on policy. It's about making sure that we know how to connect that policy with real people. And so, for example, when this week I was in Nikiski and I saw and heard from citizens there about burglaries and the rash of burglaries, we're able to work with state troopers to improve the presence there and reduce crime in the area. So grounding, faith, family, and friends.
Mr. Walker, what's your recipe for staying grounded during a tough political campaign?
Well, I've invited my family to be a part of this campaign. Anybody who knows our campaign knows that they're every member of my family, whether they want to be or not, are at the, you know, my brother Bob does a sign, my wonderful wife Donna, Lindsay, Tessa, Adam, Jordan, I mean, Greg, I mean, it just goes on and on around the table. So they're part of it. This is a family effort. This is not a, you know, what's Bill up to today. They know what Bill is. In fact, something they know before I do what's going on. You know, this really isn't different, unfortunately, for me in some respects, because I've spent the last 20 years working on LNG project at Tidewater, and I have spent, you know, when I speak and go to Rome and speak at the World LNG Summit, you know, Donna was able to go with me. So that was a plus. Not always. Sometimes she's able to. I have missed tons of birthdays. I've missed tons of family celebrations because I have been, you know, off meeting with companies around the world to bring a future to this state. So, you know, when the governor says I've accomplished nothing, I take offense to that. We have accomplished a lot. I'll be talking about that a little bit later, but if you pay attention, you'll know what we've accomplished. It's been very significant, and if you had been more involved and recipient to the market, you would have known that firsthand.
The next question has a little bit of a twist to it. It's more based on critical thinking and reasoning based on the candidate's positions at some point in time, either during their administration or during the campaign. Mr. Walker, we're going to start with you. Currently, the state of Alaska is participating in the Alaska LNG project. As far as all are concerned, the LNG project is making good progress. Companies are aligned. They're making investments. They're bringing some of their best people in the world to Anchorage and throughout the state, like Point Thompson, to make sure this happens. You have stated, currently the state is engaged as a 25% partner. You have stated that you want the state to control 51% of the project. The question is, what makes you believe investors would consider taking a minority interest in the most expensive oil and gas project in the history of the United States? 60 seconds.
A couple of things. Let me collect one thing. We're not 25% owner of the project. Alaska is 25% owner of the liquefaction part of the project. We have zero interest in ownership in the pipeline. The answer is that they do it all over the world. We're the unusual ones. You know, look at Qatar, look at Norway, look at all over the world where the host government has control of the development of the resources, the majority interest. That doesn't, look at Canada's first pipeline they built. They built it themselves finally after doing for 3 years what we've done for 37 years. They owned it for one day. 24 hours after it was done, they sold it to TransCanada. You know, it's unusual for the host government to sit back and hope somebody continues to do something good for them. These companies are wonderful companies, don't get me wrong. But they have competing projects all over the world. They're going to be impacted by a decision of a gas from Alaska. That's why we need to be truly in the driver's seat, not acting from the driver's seat. And the revenue associated with the project brings back $419 billion to Alaska. That's why we need to be in the driver's seat. We need that revenue. We need it now. We need to be in charge of this project. I'll work with those producers. I always have. But when they make the decision of going forward or not, you need a governor there that says, push the go forward button and say, you know, this is good for Alaska. We're going to do it. We're going to do it on our terms, our schedule, local hire. Let's get the job done.
The moderator is going to follow up with a question. Mr. Walker, that's exactly what AGEA attempted to do. AGEA attempted to inject the state into forcing the project, and we saw how that fails. So the question from our members would be, if it failed under AGEA, how is the state gonna be able to push the button to go when we're depending on others to finance and pay for the project?
Actually, AGEA didn't fail. a GA result in an open season in 2012, September 2012, and the response to Tidewater. Finally to Tidewater. Yes, going down through Canada, as the governor pushed through Canada for years, that did fail. But the one to Tidewater did not. The response from the market, from CoGas, from Tokyo Gas, Tokyo Electric, from all the companies in the Asian market, written response was 200% response on the open season. And what did we do? The governor started over again with a new project. No response back to the market. 200% of the market showed up. So I don't believe a GEO failed, because the fact that it resulted in a very successful open season to Tidewater, we just didn't engage, didn't respond back, never picked up the phone, never said thank you to the world's largest LNG buyers. My goodness sakes. And our answer, let's start over again. We start over again too much. We're not going to start over again in my administration. We're going to finish the job.
Governor Parnell, since you've been in office, you've supported two of the most contentious economic development policies in Alaska's resource development history, with ACES and AGEA. What made you believe these two policies would ever move Alaska's economic development forward?
With ACES at the time, the choice was either ACES or the PPT, which we know had been corrupted by, which had been tainted by corruption with a couple of the individual legislators and some folks that ended up going to jail. The choice at the time was ACES or PPT. That was also, ACES was also modeled on $60 to $80 barrel oil. That didn't factor in what would happen with investment when oil prices went up. We spent years watching guaranteed oil decline, and that's why we had to change course and actually now have new investment, new jobs, and new opportunities for Alaskans. On the AGEA side of the equation, we are in a historic place, because with what has happened with SB 138 and the gas line, the AKLNG project is buying property on the Kenai right now, on Nikiski, for this project. That's how real the project is. We've never been in this place, and yet Bill Walker would start over and renegotiate the deal because he doesn't like the structure. Thank you.
Our next question is on mega projects. And Governor Parnell, we'll start with you. The state is looking at a full menu of mega projects. You've got the Susitna Watana Dam, you have the road out of Juneau, we have the Kinnick Arm Crossing. At what point in time, with limited resources, should the state pick one or none of these projects and move forward, Governor?
At the time when we have something in hand for Alaskans. At this point in time, when you think about, for instance, the Alaska LNG project, the AKLNG project, we don't have to spend billions of dollars or commit billions of dollars right now. We're in that pre-front end engineering and design phase. That means we're in it for $70 million. We can afford $70 million to see if we can get even more historic progress on a gas line. When it comes to Susitna Watana, we had to spend about, I want to say, $35 million this year to take it to that next step. Yes, everything has to be on the table. Yes, we have to prioritize spending. But until that point, when we have to make a significant, really significant financial decision, we should not be choosing between whether cheaper energy comes to Alaskans from Susitna Watana or from a gas line. We need to push forward both projects until we get certainty on one. Thank you.
Mr. Walker, when does the state start to winnow the list of mega projects?
The day I'm elected. We are doing projects that compete with each other. We're doing a small volume project next to a large volume project. We're doing studies upon studies upon studies. We need to put everything on the table and decide what can we do, what we can't do. I'm a project guy. I'm a construction guy. I come from construction. I love big projects. Don't get me wrong. But we got to be able to pay for them. They got to make sense. They got to have a fiscal side to it. Not every project will, but those that will, I'm interested in those that are going to save Alaskans money, that are going to have legacy jobs, not just construction jobs, legacy jobs, bringing down the cost of energy. We need to look at them all. You know, we tend to do parallel projects so we're safe. I don't think that's safe. We're in a fiscal crisis. $7 million a day is what we're draining our accounts for, because of ACES, by the way. Otherwise, funds wouldn't be there. So we're draining those funds, trying to do all these projects. Someone has to step up and say, some projects we just can't do, and be able to suffer the political consequences of telling somebody, we can't do your project. If we just don't have the funds, it doesn't make sense. We need that kind of leadership.
You're listening to Addressing Alaskans with Alaska candidates for Governor Sean Parnell and Bill Walker. This debate was hosted by the Anchorage Chamber of Commerce. It was recorded at the Egan Center on Monday, October 21st. Chamber of Commerce President Andrew Halcrow serves as moderator.
Now we'll get into candidate-to-candidate questions. 60-second response and a 30 cents. Times are tight, Governor. We got a fiscal crisis going on here.
30-cent question, here it comes. Cent,
that's
all right.
30-second rebuttal, I apologize. Mr. Walker, your question for Governor Parnell, please.
Sure. Governor Parnell, you have talked about your 16,000 jobs repeatedly, and my question to you is how many of the jobs you of those 16,000, how many of those were Alaskan jobs, how many of those were outside jobs?
You know, the bottom line is most of those are Alaska jobs. I don't know the specific, you know, whether it's 15,900 or if it's 14,000, but the bottom line is most of those are Alaska jobs. And in fact, there actually are more American jobs beyond Alaska that were created with the policies that I've pursued. This is about creating more opportunity for Alaskans. In this town alone, there were more than 2,000 new businesses started as a result of the policies, but that's not me creating those businesses. That is Alaskans creating those small businesses in the climate that we have. When Cook Inlet was about to suffer those brownouts and we went to work with, we had already gone to work with legislators on a tax policy, we had to wait those 3 years or so for that investment to come. And now we have more gas than we ever had before, creating lower cost energy to drive new businesses and new jobs. So the bottom line is we are focused on Alaska Hire. Most of those jobs are taken by Alaskans and will continue to be so.
Mr. Walker, 30-second rebuttal.
But isn't it true that 16,000 jobs is the worst record over the last 32 years of a full-serving governor in the history of our state? Isn't it true that Alaska is the only state and union that has had job losses this year? And isn't it true the last 4 months we've had a job loss in Alaska every single month of the last 4 months? We expect to have another one coming out tomorrow also showing job loss. So the 16,000 job record is really actually a pretty terrible record given the history of our state.
Tell that to the families that are now hired because of the policies that we have. Tell that to the people who can now afford education and can afford to feed their families with those 16,000 jobs. Tell that to somebody who was saddled with and inherited the recession and saw us through that recession with stability and certainty.
We should probably tell that to the timer.
She's not waving at me, right. So.
Governor Parnell, your question to Mr. Walker, please.
30 cents.
That's right.
So I get a survey rebuttal.
So Bill, in our Juneau debate, I asked you about that 16% budget reduction that you promoted on Dave Stearns' show. I asked whether that applied to education, Medicaid, and your response was, we have to put everything on the table. However, in front of the Great Alaska Schools Group, you said we must raise the BSA and adjust for inflation. You said you would sponsor legislation yourself to spend hundreds of millions more dollars on education during your term of office. So my question, will you spend less or more on education in the next fiscal year? And if so, how much? Yeah.
You know, I will take a look at education. Education is a very high priority in our administration. Byron Mallott, when he filed to run for governor, that was his number one priority. And we'll maintain education as a very, very high priority. Now, where that comes in on the fiscal side, I don't know, because as I said before, you know, we are going to look at education sort of holistically, and part of it will be the budget and the funding, but you know, for me to be sort of criticized, as I've been during this entire campaign, because I had the audacity to talk about, you know, the fiscal deficit and the one that you've created, you know, because my cleanup plan doesn't meet somebody's satisfaction of the mess you created, you know, it's a little disingenuous to have that to take that approach. So yes, I'll put things on the table. We have to put things on the table. Does that mean that there'll be one department will be cut more than another department? Absolutely not. But we have to look at them all. We have to be reasonable about this thing. Based upon, we just can't sustain the 10-year forecast you have put together of deficit spending every single year.
And I don't have a problem with, you know, stating a position, but what I have a problem with is changing a position. And when I hear him speak about a 16% budget reduction on Dave Stearin, and then say that he's going to cut education in one forum or put it on the table for cuts, and in the other forum with an interest group say, I'm gonna introduce legislation myself to raise that BSA and that inflation adjustment factor. He did the same thing with Medicaid. He promised Medicaid expansion, but promised that Medicaid was on the table. That is not leadership.
Mr. Walker, your second question for Governor Parnell.
Governor Parnell, you have, shortly after the Trans-Alaska Oil Pipeline was valued in 2014, you almost immediately fired the chairman of the board who assessed the value of that, which is appointed by the governor, the State Assessment Review Board, and attempted to replace Marty McGee with a resident of California from Salinas, California. Why did you think that was in the best interest of Alaska to appoint someone from Salinas, California to sit on the Assessment Review Board on the value of the Trans-Alaska Oil Pipeline?
First off, the governor gets the privilege and honor of appointing about 1,000 people to boards and commissions, which I have done across the last 5 years. This particular SAR board is a very specialized tax assessor board. I got criticized last time for trying to put somebody other than a person on it who is focused on local governments, because the SAR board's job is not to maximize the return to local governments, but to look out for the state's interest pursuant to statute. What does that mean? If a local government has a higher tax valuation on TAPS, what that means is you get less in the permanent fund, you get less royalty to the state, and you get less taxes. It's about sharing and maximizing Alaska's wealth for all Alaskans, not just for those communities that happen to live along the way of the pipeline. So that's what we're trying to do, is create that balance that is there in our statutes, not tilt the table towards one party or the other. Thank you.
Mr. Walker, 30 seconds.
You need to pay attention to how that worked, Governor. Half the revenue goes to the state of Alaska. As a result of what the municipalities did, the state of Alaska has $1 billion more revenue than you would have had that process the municipalities had not done. So for every dollar that is brought in, 50 cents goes to the state of Alaska, 50 cents is divided up amongst the municipalities. $1 billion more in revenue to Alaska as a result of the work done. And you're opposing that, trying to drive down the value. I'm confused who you might be working for, Governor.
Governor Parnell, your second question for Mr. Walker.
Well, I'm gonna stick with it, because Mr. Walker is clear that what he wants to do with a gas line is renegotiate the terms. And I want to hear, how will renegotiating the terms not delay or stall out a gas line? How do you take it from where it is today in pre-feed, go renegotiate something so the state has 51% ownership, and not delay the historic progress we're on that the financial experts and the legislature agreed we should continue on this path on?
I need to see what the deal is. I mean, it's all confidential. Even the legislators have to sign confidentiality to see what the deal is. You know, the structure itself isn't horrible. It creates a framework for a permitting process. We've been down that road many times before. Nothing new there. But there's another process that creates the incentives, or the concessions, I'll say, that we give up for somebody to do something that we should have done long ago. So that's the part I'm concerned about. But, of course, I've never seen the details, nor have anybody else here, unless you're a legislator and you signed the confidentiality agreement. Is that how we're going to do business in Alaska? Not in my administration, not in Biden Mock administration. We're not going to require the legislature to sign confidentiality agreements. You're going to know what's going on, because we're going to tell you what's going on, because it's your resource. And I'm tired of things being done behind closed doors in this state. We don't know what's going on. Suddenly it comes out, and, you know, take it or leave it. No, I'm not going to go in and renegotiate. I'm going to go in and look at what's there. I don't know what's there, because it's kept from us. It's kept from you. I have to look at it before I decide if it's a good deal or not. But I will not proceed if not a good deal. Maybe it is, but we got to see what the deal is, rather than behind closed doors. Who are we protecting?
Governor Parnell, 30-second rebuttal.
If you believe slogans, you'll believe that. But this is the most open and transparent gas line process there's ever been. We put the independent experts up there in front of the legislature. We had guidance documents for every agreement that's negotiated that assure things like local hire, that assure things like our ownership share, that assure off-ramps for the state when it's not in the state's interest. We come back within 12 to 14 months to the legislature for approval to move forward to the next stage. That has never, ever been done before. We will continue to be open and transparent with the public. And yes, we cannot negotiate in secret like he's perpetuating here. So.
And now we come to audience questions. We have two wireless mics, one on each side. So if you have a question, please raise your hand and somebody will bring a wireless mic to you. Again, please make your questions brief, no statements or speeches.
The mic wasn't working at this point, but a member of the audience asks about expanded Medicaid coverage in Alaska.
Mr. Walker, we'll start with you. 60 seconds for a response, please.
Let me be clear. We will accept expanded Medicaid on day one. We will do that because it helped 40,000 Alaskans. You know, I recently was at the UAS in Juneau and talked to a student there in a forum we had, and she came up in a wheelchair. And she said, without expanded Medicaid, I have to spend 6 hours more in my wheelchair than I would otherwise because I'm not able to have a helper. It helps Alaskans. It's 100% funded by the federal government. We have paid for that. You know, it creates additional thousands of jobs. I mean, those individuals, going to the emergency room is not a health care plan. We're paying for that. We need to bring down the cost of health care in Alaska, not increase it by keeping up to 40,000 Alaskans off the coverage. Yes, we will accept expanded Medicaid, you bet.
This is Bill Walker's problem. He cannot run from his own statements. Yes, I'll expand Medicaid on day one, or as he said in Southeast debates, Medicaid is on the table for 16% cuts, just like everything else. Which is it? Which Bill Walker policy will show up when he steps into the governor's office if he's elected by Alaskans? It's true, I did decline Medicaid expansion at the time because I believed that it was not financially the right thing to do. It is not financially right to take billions of dollars more from the federal government and saddle our kids with that debt, that national debt, which currently exceeds $18 trillion. That's just not right. It's also not right to suggest that all of these new Medicaid dollars don't increase healthcare costs. They do. There's more dollars chasing the same healthcare services. Costs are going to go up. We need to bring together, for example, the small business community and pool it with other states with smaller populations so that we have a larger risk pool and drop insurance rates, for example, for small businesses. That's one way we can address and take down health insurance costs.
Thank you, Governor. Another question?
This is really towards you, Governor Parnell. Can you please discuss your role of the recent media with the National Guard?
My role, I'm going to discuss my media with the National, my role with the National Guard.
And the report.
Not with the media.
Yes. Perfect.
So my role with the National Guard has been to act on every complaint and concern that has been brought to my office, which I've done since 2010. In 2014, After I could not get to the root of those issues, but I had more evidence of what was going wrong, I asked for that independent investigation. And so the Office of Complex Investigations from the National Guard Bureau came in, did a 6-month deep dive, interviewed 185 people, did a command climate survey where they got responses from 1,000, found huge concerns in the Guard. I acted immediately to remove leadership. I have had 3 town hall meetings with the National Guard folks as we've brought in to take their questions and suggestions, but also we brought in a National Guard Bureau team to implement the recommendations that were contained in that report. We also have a team that is working through about 27 applications for the new adjutant, for the permanent adjutant general, and our Guard members deserve not to be tainted with a broad brush when only a few have been responsible for these actions. We honor them and we love them. Thank you.
Mr. Walker, did you want to comment on the same question, 60 seconds?
I just would have handled it completely differently. You know, if 2 chaplains came to me and in 2010 went around their chain of command, risked their careers, their military careers, I would call for an independent investigation immediately that day. That's the way those things are handled. You don't go back to the individual that they went around to see how things are going. You don't wait 4 years and call in a federal investigation. You do it immediately. You do it immediately for 2 reasons. One, for the individual who has brought the allegation. Also, for the accused. You have to. It's just standard procedure. You act immediately. You don't sit back and wait 4 years before having an independent investigation. You certainly don't go back to the rank and file that they've gone around and risk their career to go around. So I would handle it absolutely totally different.
Hi, Bridget. This is a question for Governor Parnell. You have stated support for a voucher system using public funds for private and religious schools, and have touted the recent diverting of public education funds to charter schools and away from neighborhood schools. My question is, at a time when we are losing teaching positions at public schools, how can you advocate for the removal of public funds from our neighborhood schools? I'm asking this as a student in the public school system. Thank you.
Your question assumes that charter schools are not public schools, and they are. They absolutely are. And a charter school student, or a correspondence school student, or a homeschool student, or a residential school student, there ought to be some more equity between those choices if they're all public school students. And yes, I did support more choice and perhaps sending state funding with the parent to choose where that child goes, but that does not necessarily mean that comes with less money. That can come with more money. It just depends on how it's structured. The bottom line is my bill this year, the Alaska Education Opportunity Act created more education opportunity in the public school system and provided $100 million more funding this year to the school districts and $60 million more for the next 2 years to the school districts. We need not just investment or increased funding in education, we need accountability that equals opportunity. Thank you.
In your State of the State speech this year, you talked about amending the Constitution to allow for public dollars to go to private schools. So I think that was perhaps the tone of the question, and then I guess I wonder how one would do that at a time when we are in a fiscal crisis that we're in, that we need to work a way out of. So it doesn't seem a good time to amend the Constitution to make that possible and take dollars out of public schools. Let's fix the situation in public schools and not pull it out, put it into private schools. You do that, you end up with the have and the have-nots. The rural Alaska I've traveled to, I would not see a single private school in those rural Alaskas. I want to have an education system that is treated fairly across the board, regardless of where you live, that everybody has the equal opportunity for the very best education possible. And amending the Constitution like proposed, I think, is absolutely wrong.
Thank you, and thank you for those audience questions. Now we'll get into candidates' closing statements since Governor Parnell led off the debate. Mr. Walker, you're up first with a closing statement. 2 minutes, please.
Thank you very much for hosting this debate. You know, you've heard a lot of discussion about the gas line allegations. I've done nothing in the last 30 years, goodness sakes. That's a pretty ridiculous claim based upon what I brought to your office, what I brought to Alaska. That's why I asked in Fairbanks, and I'll ask again, I challenge you to a one-hour statewide televised debate to just talk about the gas line. You have made it a central theme of your campaign is to attack me. I'm the start-over guy. Man, I tell you what, I'm not the start-over guy. I will finish this job. I've had to dig that ditch by hand to do it. I'll make that happen. So don't tell me I'm a start-over guy. I challenge you once more to that debate. Transparency. We will have transparency in the Walker Mulott administration. When in 2010 we had an open season for Aligned to Canada, you wouldn't make that available before the primary. You kept that secret. Finally, FERC made it available. It was a total bust. You know, the current gas line efforts are confidential, as we've talked about before. The LNG trucking to Fairbanks, the results, the financial analysis of that will be released on November 5th, one day after the election. Some habits are hard to break. Regarding the National Guard emails, you know, why haven't you made those available? You said they were going to make them available. Now we're involved in, there's litigation going on about the making that available. You know, that should have been made available right away. You know, it's time we have trust in the governor's office, and that's what Byron Mulott and I will do. We'll put trust back into that office. You know, we're not basing our election on a partisan battle. We just want to be Alaskans. Couple of lifelong Alaskans saying, you know what, let's put our initials at the door. Let's invite all the best and brightest Alaskans. There are people in your administration I'd like to keep. There are people in your campaign that I think would make good positions in my administration. It's not about picking sides. The only side we pick is the state of Alaska, and we're going to do what's best for Alaska. That's what we need. That's why we want your vote. That's why we're working as hard as we are, and that's why we're going to win on November 4th. Thank you very much.
Governor Parnell, closing statement, 60 seconds.
60 or
oh, I'm
two
sorry,
minutes?
2 minutes. Sorry.
I was
not
30,
trying to cheat you out of time
too,
there. Right?
You know, this great land we live in is a land of opportunity. I saw that at 16 when I decided I was going to make my way here after being raised here. My parents before me saw that as well, and that's exactly what I'm in this for, is to create even more opportunity for Alaskans. That's why I read off that list of accomplishments of my administration from the last 5 years. The new jobs, the new businesses, on our slope so busy right now you can't even find a bed to sleep in, gas so abundant and prolific now when just a few years ago we were talking about brownouts. Those are all a direct result of the policies that I have individually pursued and collectively pursued with legislators. I don't think we should be switching course now when we've got economic growth and opportunity lying in front of us. Now, Bill Walker, he says gas line is a delay, I'm gonna finish the job. Well, yeah, you can finish the job, but you've gotta delay it or kill what's happening first if you think the current structure is, quote, as he said, fatally flawed. We can trust Bill Walker to continue shifting positions depending upon which group he's speaking to. Is it a 16% cut where everything's on the table, education, Medicaid, or is it increasing the BSA for Great Alaska Schools when he talks to you? Which Bill Walker is going to show up? That is the question. I'm offering steady, stable, consistent, forward progress towards economic growth and opportunity. And I'm doing it with our future in mind and maximizing Alaskans' interests for Alaskans. That's the governor I've been. That's the governor I will continue to be. And I'm asking for your vote on November 4. Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, campaigning is tough and it's long. So please, let's give these two gentlemen a huge round of applause.
You've been listening to Addressing Alaskans with candidates for Alaska Governor Sean Parnell and Bill Walker. This debate was hosted by the Anchorage Chamber of Commerce. It was recorded at the Egan Center on Monday, October 21st. Chamber of Commerce President Andrew Halcrow served as moderator. Election Day is coming up on November 4th. For ongoing election coverage, check out our website at alaskapublic.org. Thanks for tuning in with us today on Addressing Alaskans. I'm your host and producer, Monica Goki. Addressing Alaskans is a production of Alaska Public Media, which is solely responsible for its content. Theme music is by Patrick Lee. Views expressed are those of the host and participants and do not reflect the underwriters or KSKA. To let us know about an upcoming community event that you would like to hear on Addressing Alaskans, just go to our website at alaskapublic.org and click on Contact Us at the bottom of the page. Learn more about Addressing Alaskans and listen online at alaskapublic.org.
Life Informed. This is Alaska Public Media.